Okay, welcome everyone. It's good to see you, Henry, Judd, Phyllis, and Erwin. And I don't think there's anything going on tonight, so I presume we'll be joined hopefully by a few more people very soon. We find ourselves on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We are on 13a. We are basically on the last small line over there. So for those using the art scroll, I would imagine it is still on the first section of 13a to the first power. So here we go. Basically, what we learned last time, and let me give you an overview of what to expect this time. What we learned last time, we ended off with an idea that when someone is called a Yehudi in Tanakh, it doesn't necessarily mean they come from Shevet Yehuda, but it could be a statement about Mordechai not hailing from Yehuda, but rather that a Yehudi is someone who rejects Avodah Zarah, who rejects idolatry. So we're going to start off today is talking about Basia or Bisia, however you want to refer to her, about how she rejected Avodah Zarah. We'll discuss the different names of Moshe Rabbeinu, and then we'll talk about the names of Esther versus Hadassah. How Esther was Esther's primary name Esther, or was it Hadassah? And then we'll talk about how Esther was actually married to Mordechai, which complicates things. And then finally, ending off with Esther's time in the palace and concluding with talking about Rachel and Shaul and why their line merited to have Mordechai come from them. So that's what we will be dealing with. Sorry, Esther come from them. Okay, so here we go. Rashem Pazi ki hava pasach b'divrei hayyamim. So Hashem and Pazi, when he would begin his discourses on Divrei HaYamim, Chronicles, Amar Hachi would say the following: Kol Divarecha Echad Heim V'Anu Yodin LeDorshan. All the things that all of your words are one, and we know how to interpret that. What does that mean? If you glance at Rashi on the second line at the end, he says, Harbe Shemos Atamaskir Ploni Ploni V'Kulan Adam Echad Heim. So there'll be many names that are mentioned in Chronicles in the Divrei HaYamim. Now, to the untrained eye, it might just seem like Divrei HaYamim is unloading historical information and dry data, but actually, what it's doing for us is, if you see a lot of names, there actually might be some homiletical imports, and that's what we're about to see. So, what's the following pasuk that we are going to interpret? So the pasuk is the Ishto HaYehudiyah Yolda Es Yered Avi Gedor Veschever Avi Socho Vesigusiel Avi Zanoach Ve'Lebnei Basia Bas Paro Sher Lo Kach Mered. So that is the pasuk that we're looking at, that there was a Jewish woman who gave birth to Yered, who is the father of Gedor, and Chever, who's the father of Socho, and Yekusiel, who's the father of Zanoach. And all these are the children of Basia, the daughter of Paro, who Mered took for a wife. So we have a lot of names over here, but actually what Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi is telling us is that don't get so flustered. All these names actually, for the most part, are referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. So am I Kari La Yehudia? But first things first, why do we refer to Basia as a Yehudiya or Yehudaya? Al Shum She Kafra B'Avodah Zarah, because she rejected Avodah Zarah. When it says that Basi was going down to the river in order to bathe, or Yochanan, she wasn't just going down to the spa, but she Basavia. She was going down to wipe herself clean of all of the Avodah Zarah, of the idols of her father. So it was actually symbolic. It wasn't just like she was going out to the lazy river and then, oh, do you know there's a baby here? But it was actually symbolic going down to the river to cleanse herself of her impurities. Yolda. So it says that she gave birth to Moshe. I have a Rabbi say she didn't give birth to Moshe. She raised him, but she didn't give birth to him. So why does it say that? Lomar lach, it's to teach you. This is a beautiful idea. Anyone who raises an orphan, a male orphan, a female orphan, and any kind of orphan within his home, the pasuk, the Torah regards them as if they gave birth to that child. Very nice. So Moshe, even though he wasn't the biological son of Basia, he was essentially like a son to him. Yared. So all these names in the pasuk we said refer to Moshe Rabbeinu. So what way do they refer to Moshe Rabbeinu? Yared ze Moshe. So in what sense? Eleven Nikra Shmo Yared. She Yared lehem Yisrael min biyamav, because he brought down the man during his days to the Jewish people. Great. Gador. What's that tell us? She Gador appeared to say in Shal Yisrael that he built up the fences. He built up all the breaches that the Jews made. Chever. That's an easy one. He connected the Jews to their God, to their Father in heaven. Socho shenas lehem Yisrael kisuka. That's interesting, actually. Socho in the pasuk, I think it was with the sin, not with the samach, right? That's interesting. I just noticed that on my read here. That switches it to a samach, am I right? Yeah. Where is it? Yeah, that's so interesting. Socho in the pasuk is sin, but they switch it to a samech for the purpose of his drasha. Why? So that way you can say, socho shenasa nisal kesukah, that he was like a sukkah shielding the Jewish people. Yekusil, shekovi Yisrael lekel biyamav, that the Jewish people, they pined and hoped for God during his days. And the name Zenoach, she's niach avonosan shel Yisrael, that he was the one who was able to discard and throw off all of the iniquities of the Jewish people. So all these names are really just descriptions for Moshe Rabbeinu. So when you ask, how do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu had all these different names? That's where it's from. Avi, Avi, Avi. But we see that he's referred to as a father. If you interpret the pasuk as referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, then we see that he's referred to as a father thrice in the pasuk. What's that come to indicate? Av b'Torah, he was the father in terms of Torah. Av b'Chachma, father in wisdom. And Av b'Nevi'ah, he was a father who was above all in terms of Nevuah. Great. Last part of the pasuk we'll get to momentarily. Bela b'nei basya b'siyah shir lakach mered. B'chi mered shmo, is mered his name? So this name actually does not refer to Moshe Rabbeinu because it's the father of Moshe. Well, not really the father. It's a little weird chronologically. Valo kalev shmo. Amar kadosh baruch hu, yavo kalev shemer be'etas meraglim. But Yisa is bas paro shemor de begule besavia. Not that obviously Kalev could not have been the father at that point, but at some point, basically, I'm not sure exactly when this took place. It's kind of funny. But Kalev marries Basia. Don't ask me how that works out chronologically, but thematically, it's nice because Basia, who rebelled against her father's idols, it's only fitting that she marries Kalev, who rebelled against the bad advice, the scheme of the spies. Again, chronologically, I have no idea how that makes any sense, but Chazal are clearly trying to convey a certain moral principle to us. Moving on. Okay, Rabosai, we are going back to the Megillah, back to the future. So we are Ashir HaGlam Yerushalayim. Amar Rava Shegola Me'atzmo. When we read Ashir HaGlam Yerushalayim, so imagine if you have those Megillas with the pictures in them, it probably shows Mordechai being led out in chains with all the other Jews. But what's interesting is, actually, Mordechai did not have to leave. Mordechai chose to be exiled on his own. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, from the word im, it says, Asher hagla im hagola. So he wasn't part of the Gola, he wasn't part of those who were exiled, but he went with those who were exiled. Rashi points out, that's similar to Yirmiyahu, who wanted to go out with the exiles, but then God sent him back afterwards. Okay. Next. Bahio main es hadasa. So Mordechai adopts Hadasa. Karila Hadasa, Karila Esther. Wait a minute. I don't get it. Is her name Hadasa or is it Esther? Make up your mind. So Tanya, we're going to give, I believe, five different possible resolutions to whether her name was actually Esther or Hadassah. Some approaches will say that it was Esther and then give a reason for why she was nicknamed Hadassah. And some will say her name's Hadassah and explain why she was nicknamed Esther. So here we go. Tanya was Tona Nebraisa, Raimi Omer, Esther Shema. Her name is really Esther. Ulama Nikra Shema Hadassah. So why do we call her Hadassah? Al Shem, Hatzadikim shenikru hadasim, because it's tzadikim who are called hadasim. V'cheinu omer for omed bein hadasim, as it says in the pasuk that God is going to be standing among the hadasim, referring to the tzadikim. One brief point: it's kind of interesting, actually, that we see here the tzadikim referred to as hadasim, because usually when we think about the dalad aminim sukkis time, we think about the four species. Those who are full tzadikim, we refer to as esrogim. So it's interesting that they're hadasim. So I have to look back. When I was preparing this last week, I forgot who suggests this, but essentially, in the future where we won't be eating, we'll just be nehaneh from the reyach, from the spiritual aroma. That's all that's going to matter. And the hadasim have a very nice aroma, and that's why they refer. That's why tzadikim are referred to as hadasim. So that's why she's called Hadassah, because she had that same quality as well. She was a tzaddikas.
But the etrog also has a reyach.
Yeah, it's a good question. If you remind me at the end, I remember I saw something last week, so I have it here, but not on hand, so I don't want to disrupt our flow too much. But if you remind me at the end, I'll look it back up. Okay. Al-Shemat said, oh, sorry, we just said that. Number two. Second approach to reconciling whether her name was actually Esther or Hadassah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hadassah, her name actually is Hadassah, which is kind of ironic because the whole Megillah were calling her Esther for the most part. Ulam Nikrishma Esther. So if so, why do we refer to her as Esther? Al Shem Shahayim Misateris Devareha, Shemar Ein Esther Mageres Es Ama. So because Esther, it's right, Megillah is Hester. It's about being hidden. So she hid her identity. And the whole theme of the Megillah, of course, are things being hidden and done subtly behind the scenes. And that's why Esther is the primary name that she assumes for the purpose of the Megillah. Approach number three. Rabbi Nechemia Omer Hadassah Shema. Again, Hadassah is her true name. Ulama Nikris Esther. Why is she referred to as Esther then? Shahayu Umasa Olam Kornusa Al Shum Estaher. Because they refer to her as the moon. So there's different understandings. One, just simply the moon is a very nice, gorgeous object in the night sky. I think also in, I don't know, ancient mythology too. Oh, it just froze. Do you still hear me, guys? Okay, because you guys froze remote, so that you could hear me. I think in perhaps in ancient mythology, the man is referred to as the sun, and the wife is the moon and stars, and it makes sense because it's his light coming out, and she's the one who's reflecting it in a graceful manner. Where I know that the man is referred to the sun and the woman as the moon and stars. If anyone could guess which piece of literature I got that from, you don't have to share it. Okay, so Ben Azai Omer Esther Lo Aruchav Lo Kitzar Haisa Ela Benis Kehadasa. There's probably a deeper understanding to this, but alas, I did not look into it. That why her name is Esther, but why was she called Hadassah? Because she was not, you know, it's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, she wasn't too tall, she wasn't too short, she was just right, like a Hadassah. Final approach, Rashi Makarch Omer, Esther Yirok Rokes Haisa, Mechusha Chesa Mashuk Aleha. So her name is Esther. So in what way is she like a Hadassah? That she was green. Now, why you pick Hadassim as opposed to any other green? There's many green things that grow from the ground. But okay, because Esther was green. However, she had a chutzal chesed mashach aleha. She had a gracefulness that God bestowed upon her. So it's funny. I remember as a kid, one of the, you know, there's a million Jewish Purim story books out there. And one of them, Esther actually appears green in it. And I'm thinking, why is she green? Where'd they get that from? Until someone pointed out to me, oh, you look in the Gemara, and the Gemara actually says that she was green. However, it seems to imply that that wasn't such a good thing, and therefore she required the chut shel chesed to be mashuch aleha from God. You see this language also, by the way, in the Ketzah Meraktin sugya, in which Beis Hillel Beis Shammai argue whether you're supposed to tell the woman, Kala Navichasuda, but let's say she's not Navichasuda, she's not as graceful. Are you supposed to tell it to her as it is? So you see that language come up there again, that you're not commenting on her physical beauty, which of course would be inappropriate anyway, but you're saying she has certain gracefulness. I'm not involved in the shidduch industry so much, but you'll hear from what I understand, Shachan will say, she has a lot of chen. That's what they say. She has a lot of chen. I'm told it's a backhanded compliment. But
she was green because she was vegetarian. She ate too much vegetables.
We'll get to that momentarily. Very good. Because we have to ask, what was her diet when she was in the palace? All the non-kosher food. So very good, Phyllis. Here's to Shem. We'll get to that very soon. But before that, moving on to interpret the next verse that we have here. Ki ema ava'im. The pasuk at the beginning tells us she did not have a father or mother, but then the pasuk also tells us the most aviyah v'ima at the death of her father and mother. So lovely, why do I need to be told twice about the death of her father and mother? Amravacha, it's to teach us ivarta meis aviha. When she was conceived, her father died. Yoldata, and when she was born, meisa ima, her mother died as well. So she has like any good character, she has a tragic backstory. And that's called character building. Okay. So it was when her father and mother died, Mordechai took her literally for a daughter. Tana Mishum Rai Meir, Al Tikri Lebas, Ella Lebias. Don't interpret her as Bas, as his daughter, but Lebias, for a house. Now, what do we know about the term bias, especially in halachic literature? I'll give you a hint. Think about the Kohen Gadol, the Chifer Ba'adov, Abeso. And he atones for himself and for his household. And the bias refers to his... Henry, I know you want to say it.
I'm sorry, what?
It's his wife. The bias refers to the wife because she's the Akaris of bias. She upholds the home. So in general, what you'll see is in rabbinic literature, especially, you'll see that the word bias is code word for one's wife. There are other examples, none that come immediately to mind. I think in Hadlakas Neros, Ner Ishu Beso, maybe that also. Okay, let's go forward. V'cheinu Omer. So what's the proof for this? So if we recall, there's the whole story of David HaMelech, how he sends Uriah Hiti to the front lines, he takes Bathsheba for himself, and then the Navi, I believe the Navi then was Nasan. Someone could correct me if I'm mistaken. And he actually, he comes. Okay, Shkoff, thank you, Henry. So he comes to give Musar to David, but he's smarter than I am. Other than, he doesn't get up there and give a sermon and say, look, it says in the Torah, don't commit adultery, don't kill people, and you did that, you should repent. He realizes that people don't like hearing Musar. So what does he do? He's very subtle. He basically gives an entire mashal, an entire parable, and then he asks David HaMelech's opinion on the parable. And David HaMelech, so the parable is that there was a shepherd, and he had one little shepsula, that was all he had, and he took care of it. He shared his bread with the sheep. He shared his water. The sheep was always with him. It was his companion. And then, I forget exactly how it goes, someone takes the sheep and kills it, and he's devastated by that. So Nasan asks David, what should be done with the person who took the sheep from him? And David says, off with his head. So Nasan says, I'm glad you said so, because you're the antagonist in this story. And you went ahead and you took Bathsheba from Uriah, and you're the bad guy over here. And then David's like, oh, yeah, chatasi la Hashem. Okay. So let's look at it inside. V'chinu Omer. Ularush ain kol kiim kisachas kitana asher kana. Oh yeah, this one little shepsula, the yichya the tigdalimo, and it grows with him. Then banav yachdav, it's along with his children as well. It's a member of the household. Mipito tochal mikoso tishta. They eat from the same bread. They drink from the same cup. Ubecheko tishkav, and it lays on his lap. But the Hilo Kibas, and it was to him like a daughter. Wait a minute, that's an odd language for a daughter. That's not usually how you describe how one holds their daughter. That's more intimate. Ella Lebais. Rather, it's referring to having it as like a spouse, like a wife. Achanami labais. So it's over here, we see that bas could sometimes be shorthand for bias. And so Esther was not adopted by Mordechai as a girl, but she became his wife. And you know, whether she started off young and it became his wife later, and people are going to start, you know, okay, I'm not going to go off on a tangent about this. Okay, we'll leave it there. Next. Now we are fast forwarding a little bit. Esther is brought to the palace, and here we go. Vesheva hanaros. So Esther had 7 maidservants. Wow, how many maidservants do you have? You know, I'd be happy, you know, if we just had one person who did work around our house and you know, watched the baby when we needed it, that would already be a machayim. Why would she need 7? What'd she need 7 for? Ah, so pshat was that she had a different maidservant for every day of the week. So that way she would know which day is Shabbos. Why she couldn't keep a calendar or something under her bed. You know, like let's say one of them got sick, what would happen? A little unclear to me of why that was the best system, but that's the idea behind it. It's to convey to us that she was keeping track of the week so that she could observe Shabbos in the household. By the way, it's probably easy for her because she could just ask people to do everything for her, and that's Amir La'akum. And I'm not sure to what degree Amir La'akum existed back then, because this is pre-Talmud. This is pre-rabbinic literature. So it's unclear to me when Amir La'akum, when the isser of asking a guy to do something for you on Shabbos really became a thing. So Esther could just ask guy to do things on her behalf on Shabbos, and she wouldn't have violated herself. Okay, just my ha'ar there. Next. So what did he change for their benefit? So Phyllis, this gets to your point about what kind of food was she eating in the palace? So some say that they were very kind to her and they provided her with kosher food or machal Yehudi, you know, so they gave her a potato kugel and chalent. B'shmul amar shechila kadoli dechazire. Ah, so what's kadoli dechazire? One way to understand it is like chazer. They gave her pig. They gave her pig fat and, you know, like real chazer to eat. To which Rashi says, well, that is what she got, but mitoch onsa lo nensha. But it was an ones, that's all they gave her to eat. It's hard to believe. Like, they didn't give her, like, grapes or other things.
Look at, so look at the Tosfos.
What?
Look at the short Tosfos, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then take a look at Tosfos. He writes, b'chas v'shalom hi lo hayso cheles. As Henry points out, Tosfos says the opposite. What do you mean, chas v'shalom? That's what they gave her, but she rejected it. She wouldn't eat it. So I think there are different interpretations of what chazire is. It might be like chazeres. What's chazeres? We just had Pesach, guys. Did we freeze? Anyone hear me?
Yeah, yeah, you're fine.
Okay. So, yeah, Phyllis?
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay, so maybe it's lettuce, right? They gave her some vegetables, or alternatively, what's the next part of the Gemara over here?
I thought she ate lentils, by the way.
Oh, next part. Amar Zeronim. They gave her seeds, and maybe along with seeds, that's lentils as well. Vechinu Amer by Yi Hameltzer Nosei Espas Bagam Venosei Lahem Zeronim. This is what happened with Daniel, I believe, Chaim Mishael Vezaria, when they were in the court of King Nebuchadnezzar. They also, they ate seeds instead. So, I mean, this is what we have out of Yom HaZeh. You go on a conference, there's no kosher food around. So, I mean, nowadays, there's all sorts of packed items you can bring with you, right? So you can bring an MRE with you if you so desire. But ultimately, you know, maybe bring fruits and vegetables and you're fine. So that's what they did back. Good. Shisha Kadosh B'Shemen Hamor. Now, how long did it take for them to prepare to meet with Achashverosh, all the women who are being prepared? So, you know, a girl on her wedding day, it might take her a few hours with a professional, but then she's ready to go. Why did it take 6 months? What was this whole process? What was the Shem and Hamor they were using? So my Shem and Hamor, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Sateches, it was balsam. Rav Huna Amar Shemen Zayin Shel Hevi Shlish. It was olive oil from an olive that did not yet reach a third of its full growth. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afikinon, Shemen Zayis, Shalhevi Shlesh. Great. Ulamas Sachinoso, what was so special about this ointment? Shemashir Sasear, that it removes all hair from one's body. Uma'adah Sabosar, and it caused the flesh to gleam. So that's what this treatment was. The treatment process took 6 months for it to finally have its full effect. And that's why they were waiting that long.
I get the sound. The assembly line.
But Phyllis? Oh, okay. The Erev he ba, the boker he shava. So in the evening, a woman, she would come to Achashverosh. And in the morning, she would return back. Ara Yochanan, oh, Mignuso Shalasa Rasha, from the despicableness of this wicked person. Lamanu Shimcho, we can still extract a lesson from him. Shalhaya Mishamish Mitasubayom. So from the fact that he was such a disgusting person, every night he just took another woman and used them. And, you know, one came in and the next one after the other, was a whole assembly line. Even though he was so despicable and disgusting in how he treated other people, nonetheless, we could learn one quality that even Achashverosh, as despicable as he was, he knew to have intimate relations at night, not during the daytime. So Achas Kama Vakama, it's Chazal considered Derek Snias to only have intimate relations at night. Okay. Vatahi Esther Nasis Chain. So what's it mean that Esther, there you go, that Esther had this chain about her, this grace. Rabbi Elazar, Malamish Kol Echa Ve'echa Nidmas Lo Kumas. So we learned this earlier, that everyone thought she was part of their nation. She was, I guess, racially ambiguous to the point that everyone's like, she looks like she's from Madai. She looks like she's from Persia. So everyone was racist back then and wanted to only like people who looked like they were from their nation. So by her looking like she was from every nation, it served her purposes that everyone liked her. They thought she was one of them. But Yilakach Esther Elham Melech Achashverosh El Beis Malchuso B'chosh Hasirihu Chodesh Teves. So Esther is now brought to Achashverosh. It is time. It's her interview. And it takes place during Chodesh Teves, which is what season is Teves, guys?
Winter.
Very good, Henry. The winter. So Yireach Shenena Guf Minat Guf. God set it up. Remember, everything happens subtly. That it would be during the winter time when one benefits more from the warmth of another body, and that way she would be more appealing to Achashverosh. Next, Vayahav Hamelch Esther Mikol Nashim Vatisa Chem Vaches Lepanam Mikol Abesulos. I think the next part is, and he crowns her instead of Vashti, right? That's the next part. So Amaram Bikesh Litom Tam Besula Tam Besula Tam. So if he wanted someone who was a basula, the qualities that a virgin brings, then she was able to be like a basula. Tam ba'ula tam. So, and if what he wanted was her to be like a ba'ula, one who was not a virgin, then she assumed those characteristics as well. So everything worked out in her favor. Fayas hamel mishte gadol, avan mishtaivel gadol. So we're at the point now where Achashverosh is getting frustrated that Esther is playing hard. He thinks Esther's playing hard to get, that Esther doesn't want to reveal all of her past. She's trying to be mysterious. So first he makes a whole entire Suda. Oftentimes we think Esther is the one trying to make Sudas to win over Achashverosh's favor, but he made a Suda in order to win over her favor. Velo Gal Yale, but she still did not reveal to him her identity. Doli Karga. So he removed a tax in her name, and he would think that that was a great honor to her, that she'd be grateful. Below Galilei, she was not moved by this. Shadar Padishne, he sent out gifts to some of the noble people, below Galilei, and still she did not reveal to him. You know why it didn't work out? This is like, I hope this is not too controversial. This is kind of, it reminds me of, like you want to give a gift to someone. So there's different ways to give a gift. You could actually buy a gift for someone. You could send someone a check. There's like another way to give a gift, which is, you donate to your nonprofit that you want in their honor. So it's like the funny, I still don't fully understand it. It seems that Esther has the same mentality as I do, but I never understood the benefit of donating to your organization as a gift to someone who has nothing to do with it. So I remember Marissa and I, when we went, that's terrible. Okay. Marissa and I, we had our baby. So people from like elsewhere, they said, well, you know, we'll donate to another shul somewhere else in your honor. And we're like, we're just scratching our heads. We're like, you know, we have a shul. If you, even if you don't want to send a gift to us, you can send a gift to our shul. And that would be in our honor. It's like, there's a notion out there that you could like do something in someone's honor. And that's like giving a gift to them. So that's what Achashverosh's mentality was, that he was giving a gift to Esther by helping other people out in her name. Apparently, Esther was not moved by this. Presumably, she had a little material possession she wanted already. He did offer to give her possession over many of the lands that was under his dominion, but she's still not moved by any of this. So, becoming Basula Shanus, what's it mean that he starts bringing in other Basulos? He starts bringing in other virgins. Ozil Shakal Eitzami Mordechai. So you know, it's hilarious. Who's he go to get advice about Esther? He goes to Mordechai to ask for advice. Amar, what does Mordechai advise him? Ein Isha Miskana El Beira Chaverta. A woman is only jealous when it comes to the thigh of her fellow woman, which means she'll be jealous if you bring in other women who you consider over her, then she'll get jealous and then she'll be forced to reveal her identity because she sees that she's losing your interest. Still, Esther was not interested. Esther did not want to reveal her true identity. Now, Rabosai, let me ask you as follows. Why is it that Esther did not want to reveal her identity so badly? What would you say? So I'll give you three approaches. One approach is that this is actually based on the Targum on the Megillah. It says basically that after Mordechai saw how Achashverosh so easily killed Vashti over what, for all they knew, they don't know about the whole spat back and forth, so what they understood to be, it was a small offense. He says, you know, if he learns about Esther's identity and how she's Jewish and he doesn't really like Jews so much, he might just say, off with her head, and then the game is up. Another approach is given in Rashi on the Megillah, in his commentary on Megillah, not here, the actual Megillah, not Maseches Megillah, where he was concerned, so actually, this is the almost the opposite. Mordechai actually did not want Esther to remain with Achashverosh. I mean, especially if you understand Pshat, that he didn't simply adopt her as a daughter, but adopted her as a wife. Mordechai was probably not a fan of this whole operation. So what was his strategy? His strategy was, if she didn't reveal her lineage, her family history, Achashverosh would come to assume it was because she was from a lowly family and she was afraid that if she didn't come from a noble family, and once Achashverosh discovered that, Achashverosh would send her away. So actually, that was the plan. The whole plan was that Achashverosh would come to assume that she was not from a noble family, and that's why she was reticent to share her family identity with him. So that way he'd send her off, and then Mordechai and Esther could be reunited. But instead, he assumed she was playing hard to get, and that did not work out in Mordechai's favor particularly, but it definitely did help the Jewish people out in the end. One final approach, which is given by the Yalkut Shimoni. Now, this is a hard one to understand. But basically, Mordechai is Boreach Min HaGedula. Mordechai was very humble, like any good guy. He has he's an anav, and therefore, what was Mordechai afraid? That Esther would reveal that she came from Mordechai's household. My apologies, it disconnected. Can you hear me?
Now we can, yeah.
Okay, it disconnected for a moment. I'm not sure. Oh, seems that I lost bars here on the Wi-Fi. But I'm on Shul Wi-Fi, so I'm not sure what else I can do here. But the Wi-Fi signal here just got weaker. Very odd. Okay. Well, all right. You know what? So let's go forward and let's finish the Gemara while we can. How about? All right. Back to the Gemara, Rabosai. Back to the Gemara. We are at the bottom of the page. Amar Rabbi Elazar, my tzitzit, turning to your Gemara base to 13b. Why is it written, lo yigar mitzadik eino, that God does not remove his eyes from the righteous? Biskart sneeh shahaisa baba Rachel, zoks of Yasmin and Shal, because of Rachel's modesty, Shaul comes from her. And because of Shaul's modesty, Zach of Yatsimenu Esther, he merited to have Esther come from his line. Now, Umayitzi's vice of Rachel, what was the selfless, modest act of Rachel? I'm sure many of us are familiar with the story about Rachel giving the simanim over to Leah. Well, here is where the rabbis elaborate on the dialogue. Tzitzit. V'yaged Yaakov Rachel ki achi aviyahu. And Yaakov told Rachel that he was the brother of her father. Ki achi aviyahu? Something's wrong over here. He's not the brother of her father. Hello, ben achos aviyahu. He's the son of the sister of her father. He's the son of Rivka. Ela amar la, rather, what does he mean that he was like a brother to Lavan? So when he asked Rachel for her hand in marriage, Minasafsli, Amrale, she said, in Miu Avaramahu, I would love to marry you, but my father is a trickster, and he will not allow this to happen. He will do something. Amrale, this is what Yaakov means. He tries to reassure her, Achivan Avaramas, I also specialize. I know how to be deceptive as well. He just came from deceiving Yitzchak to give him the brachas instead of Esav. Amrale, wait a minute. Rachel's asking the question all of us are probably asking. Are tzaddikim allowed to lie? Is that a thing you're supposed to be doing? I thought, Yaakov, you're a little tzaddikal. You're not supposed to be lying. So Amrale, in, but im navar titvar v'im ikesh titafel. So basically what the pasuk means is fight fire with fire. If you're dealing with people who are good upstanding people, deal with them in a good upstanding and, nice way. But if you're dealing with people who are corrupt, people who are deceptive, you have to fight fire with fire, he says. So Amar Lush, he says, okay, Umayra Yusa, so what is this trick? Amar Le Isli Akosa Dikashi Shamina. What's going to happen? I have a sister who's older than I am. Lomitsively mikama, and he's not going to allow her to get married before her. So Maser Lasimanim, he gave her, a secret handshake, so that way he knows who she is. Kimata lele, and what and comes the night. Bahia yom or bahia laila. Not a dove. Well, that's a different part of the girl. Arahashta michas achosi. My sister is going to be humiliated. So Misartina Niela, so she decides to give Leah the simanim. Behind the sieve. And that, now we can understand the verse that says, by Hila Boker, Vina Hilaya. And it was in the morning. And then, oh my God, by golly, it's not Rachel, it's Leah right next to Yaakov. Mechlal, that Hashalav Leah. So is the pasuk telling us that it was not Leah beforehand? What it means is he didn't realize it was Leah until that very moment because of the simanim that Rachel gave her. And because of her act of selflessness, she merited to have Shalhamel come from her line. Great. Now that we're up to Shal, Matzni is Faisa B'Shal. What was the tzniyas? What was the modesty of Shaul HaMelech? Dixiv, the es dvar havalucha lo higi lo asher amar Shmuel, that when David, when Shaul was talking to his uncle and he asked him, what were you up to today? Did you find your sheep? You went to consult Shmuel. He didn't reveal to him that he was anointed to be the next king. He wasn't showing off. Because of his modesty, his humility, zocha v'yatzis mimenu Esther, therefore, he merited to have Esther come from his line. And this is what it means. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar said, Kisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu posek gedula l'adam, posek l'banav l'bnei banav ad sof kol hadorot. When God decides to grant greatness to someone, he grants it to him and for all ensuing generations. If you look in many third world countries today, or not just third world countries, you'll see this is true. You know, a certain dynasty gets put in power, and then their children take over all the government positions, and they wind up ruling the country. I think, if you look, it was in the Philippines. There was, I forgot what the name of the family that was ruling. They got kicked out during a democratic revolution, and now the son of them, they were very corrupt, just got back in power. So, you know, for better or for worse, it seems that people who make it big, they pass on their wealth and their prestige to their children as well. And you can see it's the United States. I don't think it's political. I'll say for both sides. You can look at the Clintons. You can look at the Trumps. You can look at all these families. There are political dynasties out there. Is this what he's referring to? Maybe not, but it definitely sounds like it. The unfortunate part is that the next part we don't often see come true, but supposedly, but if they become arrogant, they become haughty, then God brings them down. That you'll be bound in chains. So, God willing, speedily in our days, we should see that those who misuse their power that they are granted from their earlier generations, if they're misusing it to lord themselves over others, hopefully God will bring justice in that case. All right, Yashar Koach, that brings us to, we're on your Gimel of Beis. We made a nice dent in it, actually, and God willing, we'll pick it up next week, though I need to check my schedule. I think there is a reason I'm not available next Thursday. So we have a scholar residence lecture with Rabbi Yeshua Grunstein. It's going to be really fascinating, I think, because he is involved in Tzohar, which is the religious Zionist foil to the Haredi-controlled chief rabbinate. And he's going to talk about the conversion issues that are being addressed in Israel. So it promises to be a very fascinating lecture. Unfortunately, it's at 7 o'clock next Thursday. So we will actually have our Gemarish here at 7 o'clock on Wednesday next week, Mirza Hashem. And I already asked Matt to adjust the bulletin and schedule when it comes out. So in case you don't remember from me telling you now, you'll God willing see it in the schedule this week. So please mark your calendars. Next week only, Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Here at the show, I'm looking forward to learning together. Okay? All right.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Wonderful evening and a good show. Yeah.